This is the summer solstice. That means that the days are very long and the nights seem shorter. But momentarily, that will reverse. And the nights will get longer and the days will get shorter. And so it is our life goes. We like the light to increase, and we want it to stay like this, but it doesn't. We want our lives to continue exactly as they are, or maybe not. If we're not happy, we want them to change. And if we're happy, we want to keep things just as they are. When the flowers come popping out of the ground, we want them to bloom and stay blooming. At the Hermitage right now, we have meadows full of wild flowers. We didn't plant them. They just appear. Too numerous to count. Too magnificent. We can't keep them that way. They come and they go. They'll be gone soon. But we watch and we marvel at what keeps blooming, what keeps appearing. Baby's breath, red clover, Jacob's ladder. I discovered poison ivy, lots. It takes many forms, poison ivy does. But I looked at it and I thought, the poison ivy doesn't think it's bad. The poison ivy would present itself just like a beautiful flower. It's only that we perceive it to be not as beautiful as the flowers. Perhaps we even perceive it to be evil and nasty. Let's get rid of it. So I was reflecting today as I noticed the areas where I must be more mindful at night if I come out of my kuti. Just know there's poison ivy is there and don't step there. Because at night you can't tell what's what. I noticed that I didn't have the fear or the aversion to it that I would have had before, because it just seemed so happy under the shade of a big white pine tree, gleaming. You know, they're very shiny, the leaves. And I thought it has its own beauty. So if we contemplate the things in our lives, what's beautiful in our lives? June is beautiful in Canada anyway. In New Zealand, June is winter. Nasty, cold and windy and not pleasant. But here, Northern Hemisphere, it's wonderful. And then comes the solstice and the days start getting shorter and we want June and the meadows full of flowers. And so if we have too much joy, it just gets so lush and heavy that if it was just all joy, how would we appreciate it? If we all lived forever, if we never got old and we never died and there were always flowers in the meadow, would it still be so magnificent and beautiful? Or would it be dead? It wouldn't be alive, because life is made beautiful by death. If there was no solstice, if it just kept getting brighter and brighter and brighter, would we ever get fed up of daylight, of sunlight? In our very northern climates, the winter is such a long darkness for so many months. We don't have light. Would we get depressed? What would happen if we never had darkness? We can contemplate what is it that brings up real joy in our hearts. Real joy comes out of understanding suffering, not just out of having pleasant conditions all the time. And if we try to have perfect conditions, Does that mean that it should only be like I want all the time, only pleasant? Or is there something else that has the ability in us to understand change and not be touched by it? Is there something within our hearts that can still see the beauty in the change, the beauty in not being able to keep things a certain way and control them? What would it be like if it never changed? If we always had to live with the same person or with ourselves, just the way, if we never changed, just stay like this forever, that wouldn't be too good, would it? What would it be like? It would get very boring, wouldn't it? We would get fed up. We really thrive on the change. But more than thriving on change, it's important to investigate change and to see where we can abide with ease rather than dis-ease in the midst of change without feeling insecure, without feeling like we're losing something, without getting upset or irritated. And if we do, to observe that and to not be turned upside down by it. So imagine, rather than staying exactly as we are physically, that it should always be warm, and certainly the body is more comfortable, but the mind can be just as miserable in the middle of summer, and you're living with very kind people, you can still fall into chronic depression or become dissatisfied, because that's the nature of our condition as human beings. There is a possibility through this practice of meditation to train the mind to abide in that consciousness, that awakened consciousness, which is so strong within itself that no matter what the conditions are on the outside, we can still be open, accepting, unmoved, unperturbed. The skeptics will say, that's not possible. A senior monk from Bangkok wasted a lot of his life in study and administration. He had heard that Longpu Ajahn Dun Atulo was a most venerable Thai forest meditation master. He went to visit Longpo and discussed different points of meditation practice with him. And finally he asked him, do you still have any anger? And Longpo immediately answered, I do, but I don't pick it up. So it's possible for human beings to, as the Buddha pointed out, but it's not just the Buddha who lived 2,500 years ago that was able to develop his mind to the extent that he would not suffer from anger. And he gave us a training system which even contemporary monks and nuns practice and perfect, that kind of mental stability and strength. Imagine a mind that, in spite of miserable conditions, in spite of old age, sickness and dying, terminal illness, war, drought, lack of food, would still be able to maintain a state of non-irritation, non-anger, non-harming in their minds. And the meditation practice really is a vehicle for that. Of course, one thing that's very important for us to do is always come back to the Four Noble Truths. And the simplest formula that I've seen, it's from Longpo. If we take the origin of suffering to be external conditions, then we're going to be blaming something on the outside, or we maybe think, well, I'm too old, or I have this terrible illness. So we blame internal conditions, we blame ourselves or the outside, or the somebody that we don't like that is responsible for your permanent state of unhappiness. The Four Noble Truths, as the Buddha taught them, are meant to help point us to investigating the condition of suffering, its origin, the possibility that there is an end to that suffering, and of course, the way to end suffering. So the first and second being, suffering exists. You know, conditions change and we don't like it. That's suffering. Or we have a job that we're not happy in. We don't feel content with our family members. Our children disappointed us. Our teachers disappoint us. Buddhism disappoints us. Meditation isn't good enough. If we look at our suffering deeply through meditation, we can realize where this unhappiness starts. The Buddha taught non-suffering and this systematic way of realizing that non-suffering. And Lung Pu put it in this way. The mind sent outside is the origin of suffering. You're sitting and you're focusing on your breath as an object, for example, and you keep bringing your attention back to your breathing, and it wanders back to the breathing, and it wanders. Then you hear the people on the street, the mind wanders to outside conditions and away from the object of our meditation. This is the suffering. We cannot stay put with the present moment. We just can't stay. The mind sent outside. It's not that we're sending it. It's the habit of it going out. It gets sent outside instead of keeping it in, keeping the attention present. The result of the mind sent outside is suffering. What happens when we're not able to focus on the breath and we're just constantly wandering in our thoughts? Then we keep thinking, and thinking takes us into the story of our lives. And as soon as we start chewing on the story, maybe the thoughts are pleasant at first, and then suddenly the image comes up of someone we don't like or something that we did that we feel bad about. Thinking is suffering. Then if we keep focusing on the breath and investigating the conditions of the breath, the characteristics of the breath, our relationship to the breath, and not allowing the mind to wander, then we begin to realize the true nature of mind and body. Mind seeing itself, mind seeing its true characteristics. We start to understand the impermanence, the unsatisfactoriness, and the emptiness of all things, including the body, including the mind. Then we start to understand that everything is naturally arising and ceasing. As we stay with the breath, eventually we are no longer experiencing the breath, we're experiencing reality. We understand that this person that we believe that we are is not what we are. And all that we're attached to does not have the same kind of power over us. The mind settles into the state of pure awakened consciousness and is no longer caught in greed, in anger, in fear, in anxiety, in restlessness, in dissatisfaction. And we begin to taste within us that which is truly joyful and peaceful. From that kind of realization, we see freedom. If we have that kind of staying power, things around us may be violent, frightening, painful, but we're not touched by it. Our consciousness is no longer pulled by it. It's like Lung Po said, do you still have any anger? I do, but I don't pick it up. We no longer feed on worldly things in the way that human beings normally do. This is a tremendous freedom. And the way he described it is, the mind, seeing the mind, is the path. This path to freedom is the ability of our mind to go so deeply into itself that we see the true nature of the mind. We're no longer somebody, I am a meditator who's breathing in and out, and there's the breath, and now I have a short breath, and now I have a long breath. I like this breath, but I don't like that breath. We're no longer dividing it up, lost in pleasant and unpleasant. We're no longer caught in the worldly winds. We're just witnessing conditions changing until there is no movement in the mind. And we witness the complete emptiness of all conditions, then consciousness is freed, awake, pure, empty. We think of emptiness as there's no more existence. It's just rubbed out. And in a sense, yeah, the imprisonment in this suffering body, body, mind, suffering completely changes, just like the solstice. Night that was turning into day starts turning into night again. But it doesn't matter. Because it's just nature. It's like poison ivy. It's just what it is. It has its own beauty. We know we have enough wisdom not to touch it, because it might make us sick. So if you see the anger, you don't touch it. Because if you pick it up, it will make you sick. It will poison you. Just like that, we just let it be. It doesn't belong to us, so we don't try to own it. But as long as we sit and chew with the thinking mind on our experiences, on how we want them, we don't want them, that's ego. That's thinking. Then we just create more and more suffering. Like picking up, you want to pick up all the flowers in the field and they die. You can't keep them. If you just watch them and see the joy of those delightful flowers growing in the field, they come and they go. Then comes the autumn leaves. Then comes the snow. One can't even speak about the differences in the beauty. As I was walking up the path from my cabin by the woods, everything was so lush and green. But just a few months ago, it was completely white and ice. And it was just as glorious. Now, it's not easy walking across icy meadows, but I had a warm jacket. I wasn't freezing. I was cold. And I had my snowshoes. But it was just as glorious. I can't say that the lush green is any more beautiful than the grays and whites and icy blues of winter. When the sun is very low and the nights are long and you can cut the cold with a knife. It's so sharp. It stings. You don't sit out in the cold without a coat. You don't walk on the ice without proper boots. The dangers we have to be aware of. But as soon as we put our opinions on our experience, then we get caught in likes and dislikes. And then we're no longer free. We no longer have the freedom to just relish the gifts. The result of the mind, seeing the mind, is the ending of suffering. It's so beautiful the way he puts it. The fourth noble truth, the way, the noble eightfold path, is the way out of suffering. The result of the mind, of knowing consciousness, seeing its own nature, seeing the nature of the mind, to grasp, to hold, to become, to want, to be caught in desire, then we're not touched by it. That's freedom. It sounds very simple. is the most difficult thing that we can do. Never underestimate how difficult it is. Not to wish that we would go towards winter, but if we can go towards the conditions that we usually try to avoid, it's very difficult to stay, like if you have a sitting that you don't like, immediately the judgment comes. We're always trying to make perfect conditions, following the desire mind, the wanting mind. When we take vows of celibacy and to live a monastic life and giving up the world, you don't do it in one day. Sure, it takes just one day to shave your head and a few weeks to get your robes ready and someone gives you a bowl and that's it. Then you're a nun. But so many people come and go. Just like you see so many marriages breaking up. And the nunneries used to be full too. But now people just come and go. As soon as it gets hard, they go. But when we stay, this adhitana, parami, the perfection of staying, has a power in it. The power to sit and observe the nature of the mind, to allow ourselves the opportunity to see the mind. Seeing the mind is where realization of emptiness can happen. If we don't wait until we can watch the mind picking up anger and know it, when it picks up the anger, we say, no. No, giving up anger or giving up greed. By practicing with renunciation, by practicing with determination to keep doing it, then if we don't put ourselves in a situation with boundaries, we'll just keep picking up anger. This is one of the ways that we pick up violence, if we pick up the poison ivy, instead of just watching from a distance, knowing that's trouble, that's danger. We don't stop the mind. We don't watch what the mind does. We don't see the habits. Because we don't have the staying power and we haven't given ourselves enough direction. As soon as it gets tough, I'm not talking to him anymore. Or I'm not going to work in that place. And sometimes we make wise decisions, especially where it violates our ethical foundation. We have to be morally right on the line to uphold ethical practice to its utmost. But the refinement of morality is at the level of thought. We have to go beyond refining morality at the level of action and speech. At the level of thought, it's when we pick up anger, it's when we pick up greed, it's when we have an angry thought and we practice anger, even towards people we love, someone who practices Dhamma. Then all our staying power is important. We work through all those states of resistance and ill will, all those winds, all those storms, being capsized in the middle of the ocean, of your life, of your commitment. How many times in my monastic life have I been disappointed at my teachers, or at myself, or at people who practice meditation, or at people who offer dana? Because I'm an alms mendicant and people come and bring food and they put it in my bowl and I just eat what people bring me. I can't go shopping or even ask for things that I like, except people are so kind, they keep trying to find out what I like. And if I tell them what I like, then I keep getting it to the point where I don't like it anymore. That's just the condition of the human mind. Really, what is it about our life that we can really like? That's on a material level. What can you hold? Can't even hold on to the body. It's all just disappearing. Just feel gratitude, compassion and gratitude. Give up anger. Practice generosity. We have to be very, very aware when we're watching the breath and an angry moment comes up, or it's too hard to watch anymore, not to give in. Sit through the difficult parts, because when you've sat through, at least you've watched. You've watched yourself not pick up the anger, know it for what it is and not pick it up, and see it end, or see it get stronger, or see it turn into something else. Let the mind see the mind and know it for what it is. Let determination carry us through the storm, so that the result of the mind seeing the mind is really the cessation of suffering, rather than just wanting things to be beautiful. They can only be beautiful at the level of the conditioned realm for a short time, as we know, before they change. There's nothing wrong with the solstice. And there isn't a solstice every day. It's once in a while. But it's perfect just the way it is. That much we can do, we can remember to see what's going through the mind, not to give in to the poison of anger and greed, hatred. Find the goodness in other people. Find the goodness, contemplate all the good we've done in our own lives when we hate ourselves. Never give in to hatred. Love the moment. Stay with the moment. Investigate it and turn it into the fertile ground, so that everything that comes up, whatever we're experiencing, the good days, the horrible days, they're all like compost. Just like the flowers and the poison and ivy. To awaken to pure consciousness.